Okay, we are back in session, so if I welcome the conversation, but ask that you wait till after the meeting for that. And Harvey, yes. I'm not asking us to, we're back, and again, if remarks okay. that aren't
Harvey
in your
Branscombe
comments.
Harvey from Eagle County. Yes, I was reminded that the election judges, in the context of the voter challenge on in the case of signature verification, the election judges do make a similar decision, and their decision is, of course, made anonymously. And when the voter gets the cure letter, it doesn't say, "Well, these two people decided your signature wasn't correct or wasn't acceptable." Let's put it that way. So case where the election judges actually decide to reject, it seems to me that I don't understand the reason why the fact that the challenger
because the statute says
place,
so.
But that depends on how you treat that challenge, whether it was under that statutory provision or some other. And I realize there's a full page where signature verification is not one of the listed actually options for that challenge, right? We're reusing a mechanism which
and to provide the clarification for that,
from a documentary point of view,
right, to provide the clarification for that, there was a proposed statute that would have provided this other means, but that proposed statute did not make it out of the House.
Right, there were problems with
that
statute.
And so absent that, this is the only way. Statutorily. So that's why we're tied to the statute. I fully support relooking at the issue and providing a different method for someone to elevate it, but the current statutory structure does not provide for that alternative.
So my experience in my one challenge was I was not allowed to have a copy of my challenge until I CORA requested it later on. And I was told that the result of my challenge would be that the voter would get a cure letter. And then I was asked, do I want to withdraw my challenge? And I said no, because I wanted to actually see that happen, because I think that's contrary to rule. I think it would have been an error. And it did not actually take place, I understand. I understand they actually made a different process, which they did not tell me about, and they proceeded to allow the ballot to be counted and sent my form to the voter.
So I will take that as a suggestion that the rule also include that the challenger be provided with a copy.
Most definitely. But also the challenger should be provided with a method for getting enough information to decide in a timely fashion to withdraw, so that and if they withdraw the challenge, then it does not get sent to the voter. Right? Would you agree with that? That seems like common sense to me.
The statute says
there may be,
send it to the voter unless
right, so there has to be a mechanism for withdrawal, which is rather unclear the way it actually comes down when you're actually present performing the function. You may not even know when the election judges actually determine whether or not the ballot's going to be is going to sit secure or not. So vis-a-vis resolution board, which I have, let's see. It must be near 18.3.2.
Yep.
The rule, I think this is, my text may be slightly out of date, but I'm proposing that rule should say every county should have a minimum of two resolution boards, each of two judges of opposing parties, or at least one resolution board of four judges equally representing opposing parties. And the reason for that is because if there is one resolution board of two people, that means that same board will actually be doing the duplication, and then they'll be checking it, the same two people. And that, I believe, is unwise. I think what is wise, and the original rule calls for four, and when you have four in the case of manual duplication, you can actually use two separate people, or you can have two people watching, one watching the reader, one watching the writer, which is more time efficient and equally strong. But having just two people do the original duplication and the checking is not so likely to catch errors.
And Harvey, what rule were you referencing there?
Yeah.
It's on page 16. Line 14, 15.
Okay. Yeah, I have a shorter list of rules here that I adapted out of the big list.
18.3.2C. Mm-hmm. And the difference here is you have a log created with the new systems that are coming into play that tells you exactly who made the change. So there is a different check that's there.
So on 18.4.1, which is talking about the duplication process for a damaged ballot, I believe better text can be used there, which would acknowledge the fact that there is adjudication going on in the uniform voting system. But I also believe, again, this is a place where the duplication for reason of identifying marks, which is contrary to the Constitution, can be provided for. I won't read the text, I suggest, because it's a couple of sentences. In 18.4.2, along the lines of my previous comment, I would say a separate resolution board must review the original ballot and the duplicated ballot for the reason I just mentioned. That goes along with the idea of two resolution boards of two persons each. And by the way, big counties have lots of resolution boards because each terminal has two people in front of it for second tier, and they may have many or they may have several, but in any case, they probably have more than one.
And do you think that the two resolution boards should be required without regard to whether the county manually resolves or digitally resolves ballots?
Well, I my suggestion is two member boards or 1-4 member board at least minimum. Two member or 1-4 member. Then the county can choose, which I think is the way they're operating right now, is to decide. I know a county that was kind of unhappy having used 4 election judges for their adjudication because they weren't doing an audit of the adjudication, or there was some special condition for use that provides for them to use 2 instead of 4. But that was, this is to expand on that. The 18.4.6, well, so I'll skip that one. It'll be in my text. In 18.4.6B, actually, if a voter uses a consistent alternate ballot marking method that deviates from the method specified, such as circling or placing a check mark behind the candidate's name, and does not place an X, comma, check or other appropriate mark. That is not correct. It is no longer true that an X or a check are an appropriate mark, and therefore those should not be included there. And the fact that they are included there actually leads to a voter intent guide that actually leads to voter intent not being properly interpreted. And I can actually provide examples of that on specific ballots at this point. But I think that needs to be removed, the X, comma, check. And recount procedures for optical scan. This is text that's been dropped. It's been dropped out, and I'm hoping this is not the only place where the specification for how a recount is performed is in rule. I haven't spent the time checking to see whether it's elsewhere, but it's important that under the uniform voting system we have a specification for how to increase the accuracy of the system for the purpose of the recount. And I'm suggesting that we should write in the rule, quote, set the lower threshold for adjudication of ambiguous marks to 0, and that will have the effect of adjudicating undervotes in the, as I understand, the way the Dominion system will function. So at present, the minimum is set to 5, I believe, and that's some kind of a pixel density. So set the pixel density down to 0, and then you will be adjudicating all ballots with on that contest with undervotes, no mark in the position. And judging from the ballots I've seen, there will be additional votes picked up by changing the threshold down to 0 because of the lightness, the way that the Dominion system picks up light marks. And they may only be a few pixels. The resolution of write-in votes. The only comment I have here is that the voter intent guide, I've actually realized it's fairly common for the write-in candidate to be the same name as a listed candidate on the ballot. And that case is not actually in the voter intent guide, where the I think where the target is actually listed. And the Dominion requires you to set it to other instead of non-listed candidate, I think. There's a special case there, but it turns out that there's a variety of different ways to respond to overvotes on Dominion, either by actually specifying that a vote has been needs to be counted for all of the candidates, or whichever ones that are actually marked, or to reject the, or the system itself may determine there's an overvote, or a, it may even determine that there's a blank contest. And there's several different cases there, which I think needs to be looked at when you're talking about conditions for use and potentially rules for how the adjudication is performed. So I'm just learning that the last couple of days since I got the, I've been getting the images of ballots. And finally, on my last page, so the definition of the cast vote record, I think it's important that the cast vote record actually have a way of distinguishing between overvotes and undervotes. And right now, the cast vote record only, it basically has one demarcation, which I think is a zero for overvotes or undervotes. But when you look on a ballot, when you're doing a risk-limiting audit, you're going to be comparing against something that looks very different if it was an undervote or an overvote. It's going to have multiple marks. So that means that the person doing the audit is going to have to do the calculation of whether it should have been an overvote or an undervote, as opposed to, you know, there's a mark there, there's a mark there, there's not a mark here. And this cast vote record ought to support both of those, actually. It shouldn't hide the fact that whether it was an overvote or an undervote. So that's my main comment about that. And finally, 21.4.14d5 comes again, finally, the phrase votes cast again. The number of votes cast for each unique ballot style or in each precinct or precinct split is applicable. That kind of exemplifies the confusion that is introduced by using that phrase votes cast. And I'm hoping, well, I wrote a text about it here. I'm not going to talk about it now.
Thank you, Harvey.
That's my set of comments. Thanks very much.
I appreciate it. Amber McReynolds.
Good afternoon. My name is Amber McReynolds. I'm the Director of Elections for the City and County of Denver. And I'm also a co-chair of the Election Statute Review Committee for the County Clerks Association. So the comments that I'm going to make today are a collection of comments from various counties in the state. We are planning to submit written, likely by next week, but it's hard to collect comments from 64 counties and have it all done by the hearing. So so we're going to give ourselves a few more days on that, but I did want to bring up a few things that were consistent amongst the counties during our last ESRC meeting. First on 7.5.1E, and we made this comment in the first round of rule proposals. This is with regards to striking clerk and leaving it at county. And the main reason for that is because most counties, a lot of those records tend to be stored on their city or their county IT servers, video storage, that kind of thing. And so specifying clerk is a little bit limiting to many of the counties because their systems exist at the IT department level. So just leaving it at county retains it, we feel would make it more workable for more counties. 8.15.8 is an interesting one. Counties do not have for the most part, counties do not agree on this particular rule, and so we decided to just advise counties to submit their own feedback. And the variance really was counties believed that, you know, there shouldn't be limits to watchers having and possessing their phones. Denver is one of those counties. We've never really imposed limits beyond just not recording with the device or not using any of the recording, whether video or audio. And then if they were making a phone call, they've always been asked to leave the area. But other counties, you know, sort of enforce a stricter ban, require the phones to be turned in. In Denver specifically, we've never felt the need to do that and don't really want to do that, mainly because people are very connected to their phones. It's a very personal thing. I don't want to take responsibility for an $800 device and have something happen to it. And also, if there was a natural disaster or some sort of incident, having people not having access to their phones, I think, is just not an appropriate thing. So that was a Denver-specific comment. Other counties are probably going to submit comments. But I think, again, on that one, a limit to the audio or the use of it, and then similar to what we do with voters, where we just ask that they leave the space if they're going to have a conversation on the phone, would be better. 9.2.2, and sort of that mail ballot challenge rule that just was put in or added on the Wednesday draft. What we've received so far from counties is that there's definitely perhaps a need for process clarity with regards to that rule, specifically how it would work. And so I think counties want to continue to talk about that. And I have asked counties to look at that in particular to submit comments. So I'm sure that we'll send in some further information about that one. 18.3.2C3. There were some questions and some comments regarding resolution workstation. And so I'm going to continue to see what other counties submit on that one. But I think just depending on the county setup, the workstation may not be necessarily designated for that. It could be a scanning and a digital adjudication station. So we just wanted to make sure that the rule doesn't inappropriately limit counties on how their setup is. For 18.4.1, we'd like to suggest that the rule be changed from the use of the word markings to choices or selections. And the main reason for that is we're not going to duplicate their bad marks. We're going to duplicate their choices or the selections they made in the correct format. So I just don't want to be, you know, I think markings implies that it's the way that it was marked to begin with, which probably isn't what we want to do. And then 18.4.6, a couple counties suggested that before retention for storage be added to the beginning so that counties aren't moving the records to and fro depending on what their process is. So they just thought that before those particular records, duplication records, are sent in for retention and storage, that everything be captured as listed in that rule. And then 18.5.2, a lot of counties brought this up on the ESRC call, and it's really just about since there isn't really a definition of counting judge, the recommendation was to strike counting throughout Rule 18, and also as in 18.5.2 paren 2, change code to record instead of it being code. They thought that language would be, or that wording would be more appropriate. So with that is our list of issues for today. And then, like I mentioned, we will submit written comments by next Monday. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to go back to Kathy.
Do I need to repeat my name and everything?
Just so we've got on the auto recorder, just say your name is all.
My name's on the other recording, and I'm Kathy Jarrett. I would say that I support the statement about the ballots cast by the voter, or the Colorado voter group. And also, I'd like to just give you this written thing of other concerns I have about the voting process.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Okay, question, but do it on the audio just so we hear it.
It would be helpful. I'm Al Kolwitz from Colorado Voter Group. It would be helpful, Mr. Secretary, if you would give us a little explanation of what is going to happen now.
That's what I was going to do.
Oh, good. And I'm particularly interested in questions like, will the process be public, and will there be a written description of the decisions and the reasons, and will that be available in time to revise anything if somebody discovers that the reason was absolutely unrelated to the issue or something. Thank you.
So first, let me explain the process going forward. We are open for written comments until Monday at what time? Close of business, which would be 5 p.m. And that is a week from today. So that would be Monday, August 1st at 5 p.m. No, we're open on Monday, August 1st, and you can submit them electronically even if we're closed. By the way, I did want to, the gentleman has stepped out, but I would point out that the electronic filing system does have an exception for someone who wishes not to file electronically. It's rule 19.2.1 that provides you can make a written application for based on hardship or good cause if you don't want to use the electronic filing system. So the individual, if anyone knows who he is or if he listens to the recording, he can find out that, yes, there is a process for someone in a particular situation. We will take those comments until 5 p.m. on that date, on August 1st. After that happens, and actually beginning going forward, will be as they each come in, we review the written comments, we review the oral comments. The staff then gets together and makes recommendations that go through, and at least during the time I've been secretary, usually when there are comments, we implement some of those and listen to some, and some we agree with and some we don't, and that's the process. But we do look at all of them, and we try and figure out what makes the most sense. At times, where there have been major revisions, we have provided an explanation as to why we went a particular way. And some people may find that not insufficient detail, and some may find it more detailed than they wanted. And that's something that we've started doing since I became secretary, which wasn't done before. But we do at least try to provide a brief explanation. In some cases, it may be in a summary fashion to a number of comments that have been similar. And that also depends on staff availability to get that done. But that's the process until 5 on Monday. You can continue to submit written comments. You can always send to the same source you send your comments for this. You may send comments on other rules and suggestions because we periodically review these rules. And so we continue to try to make them better. To the extent you wish to change statutes or other provisions, there are, as I mentioned, two processes for that. There's a legislative process, and the Colorado Constitution provides for an initiative process that both of those are open to folks. But we do look at the comments seriously, and we look at all of those and try to make what we believe are the best decisions. So let's see. I think I closed. Anyone else who wishes to testify that I missed at some point? Okay, just making sure. I appreciate the time each of you spent in attending today's hearing and participating in the process. I recognize that it involves sacrifice to do that, and so I do very much appreciate all comments and appreciate the input and encourage you, if there are additional things you feel important to add, that you can submit written comments by close of business on August 1st at 5 p.m. Mountain Daylight Time. Is any other business to come in front of us? Any other wording I need to make sure I include for the purposes of statute? I don't see any. It is 4:02, and we are concluding today's hearing. Thank you very much for your participation.
Do we understand correctly that the public
The staff decision-making, the deliberative process is excluded, yes.
And we should not expect any kind of detailed documentation about rejects or, whatever.
Al, if you can use the mic, just because we're, and I'm not trying to make you get your exercise.
I just want to make sure I understand correctly. We should not understand, we should not anticipate being observing the public observing the decision-making process for the input that you've just received. And secondly, we should not expect to see documentation regarding decisions on the individual items that are rejected or modified in a way that might.
So to respond to both of those, the deliberative process is something that will be ongoing and is, again, not in a format that is easily seeable since it's going to involve someone staring at their computer and looking at it. With respect to the last time we issued significant election rules, we provided a brief explanation. It's on the website. My goal is we will have something similar to that this time. And so we did, for the first time ever, provide an explanation as to why we made certain decisions. And so we're not required to do so under the statute, but I think one of the reasons I made the decision to do that is because I think it helps provide some information. Is it going to be a legal brief on each one of those? Absolutely not. And it may, if you look at the last one, that'll probably give you a similar format to what this one will be. But we do try and at least provide some explanation, which we had not done before I became secretary.
That's good.
So. Thank you again for your participation. Seeing no further questions, comments, input, the hearing is.
Thank you for coming to the chair of the hearing.
You're welcome. We're closed at 4:05.